Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Visit one of our 44 stores across Ireland for quality curtains and bedding at great prices. Find your perfect style today.
Joe at RTE.ie. We're looking for people from Ukraine living in Ireland, or indeed listening anywhere, on their views of this beautiful conversation that Donald Trump had with Vladimir Putin last night, which will see negotiations begin apparently for the end of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Oleksiy Rushenko. Oleksiy, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
What do you think?
I think this is, in general, peace is would be very good for Ukraine. But in general, I'm quite skeptic, shocked, and in a very grim mood because of this, because this all looks like a prelude to much more bigger problem, not only for Ukraine, but for the whole Europe.
Okay, let's try and get a better line there. I'll come back to you in a sec, Oleksiy, please. Victoria Vogel. Victoria, good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon.
What do you think of this new situation that's now emerged, not unforeseen, but dramatically, with this conversation between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin?
I still think that politicians, big politicians, don't think about peace. They think about power and money. All Ukrainian people, common people, they want peace. But I don't see the end of this war at the moment with such negotiations.
And is it peace at any price at this stage, Victoria?
Yeah, you see, any price, it's a big question.
Mm-hmm. 3 years, yeah, but, 3 years.
Yeah.
The war will be raging, or the invasion will be raging. Where are you from originally, Victoria?
I come from Ukraine, from Kherson. That's where the war started. And I know that it used to be 300,000 people in the city before the war. And now 90% of ash left.
My God. And have you been speaking to anyone in Kherson?
Of course, my aunt and my cousins are still there, and they are getting more and more depressed. And you can't even imagine what is happening there. Russians behave so badly, as I told you before. Hitler didn't behave as bad as Russians. Russian army behaves, and I hope Russian people in Russia would understand it. And understand that Ukraine wants peace, but not by all means. They want peace, and they want to come back to their houses and live peacefully and continue their life like it used to be before the war.
But what about, well, J.D. Vance has already said it, before negotiations have even begun, that what Russia has, they can hold.
Yeah, Russia has a lot, and they have got the best pieces of land. Mm. You know, Ukraine is a very rich country. Ukraine used to be a breadbasket of Europe. And Putin knows what he wants to take from Ukraine. But I honestly think that Putin has to manage his own Russia, big country, the biggest country in the world. He has to manage. He has lots of land, and he has to think about his people, but not about, only about war and money and power.
Okay, stay with us, Victoria, please. Professor Neil Robinson is based in UL in Limerick, professor of comparative politics. Neil, how do you frame what's happened in the last 24 hours?
Well, it's not totally unexpected that Donald Trump was going to make Ukraine agree to a peace with Russia, which would be to its disadvantage. I think the way that it's been done is far blunter than people were expecting.
Mm-hmm.
He seems to have basically conceded pretty much most of what Putin might have wanted before the negotiations have even begun. He has not made any sign of including Ukraine into those negotiations or taking into account anything that anybody in Europe might think about it. So he is alienating United States' European allies, and he is riding roughshod over Ukrainian sovereignty, which, of course, is what Putin has always wanted. Yeah. There was no real prospect of Ukraine joining NATO very quickly. You know, the Biden regime was ambivalent about it, but it was at least committed to providing some sort of security guarantees for Ukraine going forwards. Trump seems happy to slough all those responsibilities off onto Europe. And whether Europe can actually bear those responsibilities without American support, even if it's something as simple as logistics support, is open to question, particularly because any troops, any NATO troops which were deployed to Ukraine wouldn't be protected by any NATO guarantees, according to Hesketh, the new Secretary of Defense. So it's looking very bad, unfortunately, for Ukraine and very good for Russia.
And it's looking very bad for Europe, surely, as well. Absolutely. I know, you're inter alia. Yeah, of course it is. Let me bring Oleski back in. I'll come back to you in a sec, Victor. Oleski.
Yes.
Neil Robinson there painting a very, very dark picture, but people say a very realistic picture. Trump is going to do a deal with Putin. Ukraine are left out. Basically, he'll accede to Putin. It'll be if Ukraine refuse to, which they will, refuse to participate, he'll withdraw, which he wants to do anyway, all American aid to Ukraine. Then Europe piles in and says, we're going to continue to support Ukraine. And then Trump says, well, good luck, I'm out of NATO. It's pretty bleak.
So I agree with the grim picture described now. So maybe it will be sounding too radical, but Europe should start forgetting that US is a true ally, at least for now. Because this is a very clear message. Trump doesn't care about European opinion at all. Mm-hmm. And yeah, this is it. And Europe must realize that it's not a metaphor, it's not exaggeration. Europe is on its own. Whatever happens, US is not going to help. They will say this is your problem. And what we're seeing is the prelude to exactly this statement. So this is grim not only for Ukraine. This is grim for Europe because US is not ally anymore.
Yeah. It can be big, much bigger war. It can be much bigger war. It can be war between Russia and the whole Europe. And it can be stopped now if big leaders will take part in it.
Sorry, Victoria, how do you... I know it's a difficult question. How do you think it can be stopped, the march of Trump and Putin in lockstep?
I can only repeat myself that they don't think about people. They think only about money and power. And that's what it is. You know, and if it is not stopped now, the war can be much bigger, and all the Europe will be involved in this war. And it's clear after the meeting of two big presidents.
And there's a very...
If I might...
Yes,
yes, I agree. Actually, it's not only opinion. It was, I think, recent Danish intelligence report that Russia is preparing for a war exactly with the EU countries. So this is not our assumption. This is already proven by some of the European intelligence agencies. So I think the best case to try to prevent it is that Europe must realize that it has to be prepared for it. Because there is only one way to prevent the war is being prepared for it. If you're hoping for negotiations, the war will happen. Because Russia understands only force. And if it doesn't see the other force, they don't care. They don't care about absolutely negotiations. Right. Why should they?
Absolutely right. I absolutely agree with you.
But Europe isn't prepared in any shape or form militarily, is it?
No, not at all.
Well, it was about the time to start doing it in 2022. It's about to start doing it now.
I mean, Europe has already expanded a large amount of its spare military material capacity supporting Ukraine. That needs to be built up. Obviously, a lot of that is dependent upon America and American supply lines, you know, sort of munitions, parts, etc., which are made and shipped from the United States into Europe. What is going to happen with regard to trade war sort of further complicates that. So, you know, sort of Europe is in a very tricky position. It needs to be very clear about its support for Ukraine. It needs to be very clear about what actions it's going to take to secure its own security in order to force back on Donald Trump. We cannot sit around and wait for the light of reason to strike Washington, because it will not do so on its own. It will only do so under severe pressure, and Europe needs to apply that. So, you know, sort of some of the actions that we've seen in recent weeks, where some European leaders, in particular the British, you know, sort of were going off and sort of
side deals,
cozying up to Trump and talking about side deals. All of that needs to be put on hold for the sake of Europe's long-term security.
And Neil, when you say we, do you include Ireland in this?
I do indeed include
Ireland.
And so,
if you mention in Ireland, in public discourse, joining any military alliance, the country goes into, well, the political class go into free fall.
Well, you know, sort of the political class knows full well that Ireland is already heavily locked into European security structures, including structures which include NATO. So, you know, sort of Ireland needs to have a more honest debate with itself about where its security lies, and it needs to think about what it can do. Now, I mean, we're a long way, so to speak, from the front line. We're probably not in a position to develop our military capacity to patrol the Atlantic, say, or to, you know, sort of even to police our own skies. But, you know, there are things that we can do in other areas which would contribute to European security. And we need to do those things for our own protection. We need to be better protected in cyberspace. We need to be better protected our major industries and, you know, sort of intellectual property. All of those things Ireland should do, and should do it in cooperation, as well as looking, you know, sort of at our future security commitments and who they're to.
Okay, finally, Neil, I know you to lecture. I'm thinking, well, Munich, unfortunately, is in the news again this morning, but thankfully no one has been fatally injured in that awful car ramming. But it's in the news because of this weekend, and J.D. Vance and Pistorius and the German Defence Ministry minister is going to be there. But Munich, 1938, is there any analogy?
Well, one would hope not, because obviously what...
Piece of paper, Chamberlain waving a piece of paper, peace in our time.
Yeah.
Mr.
I hope not. One would hope that Europe is aware of the dangers of concession in the way that people weren't, possibly. There is less sympathy amongst the European political class, for the most part, for Putin than there was for Adolf Hitler. So, you know, hopefully Europe will rally and say, OK, if America is going to do this, if we cannot provide for Ukrainian security, we will do whatever we can, and we will burden the cost of securing Europe against the encroachment of a rather vicious authoritarian regime.
Okay, Professor Neil Robinson, thank you so much, University of Limerick. Everyone else is staying with us, and we're looking especially for people from Ukraine here in Ireland. If you want to participate in the discussion, the prognosis so far, not just by people on the programme, but by others, has been extraordinarily bleak. in terms of what's happening between Trump and Putin and the implication, not just for Ukraine, not just for mainland Europe, but for Ireland as well, isn't it? Something, what was the figure I read the other day? Something like 98% of the cross-Atlantic underwater cables are within shooting distance of the Irish coast, so to speak. And we've no submarine. We've no ways of no way of protecting them. Joe at RT.ie if you wish to participate. 51551 is the text number, but 0818 715 815. Joe at RT.ie 51551. Sorry, Anna. Good afternoon. I know you're here 20 years. You're from Western Ukraine, Ternopil. What do you think of what's happening in the last 48 hours, sorry, Anna?
Hi, Joe. I think what we're witnessing is the imperialists dividing the land that does not belong to them. And it's very disheartening to see in the light of, the people that we have lost in Ukraine in this mm-hmm. fight, and the people that have been displaced. And, for them talking about this land, it's they don't have connection to this land, you know. For people who have lived there and who were displaced and who might not have a chance to go back to their roots anymore, that's heartbreaking, you know. And I think the whole world is still in shock seeing what Trump is doing in the United States and witnessing this sort of plutocracy and totalitarian regime of Putin, how they sort of do this boy talks, you know, behind the closed doors. I think, you know, the way we say in Ireland, nothing about us without us. And I think
nothing about us without us. Yeah,
exactly. We should Ukraine should demand to be an equal at this conversation. You have to remember that Ukraine didn't fall in 3 days, and it didn't fall not because of the political
but it's
power.
Now, because of the people. I take that point, but it's now 3 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Now 3 years, Ariane. Have you any idea what is the feeling on the ground in your homeland after 3 years? And with the arrival of Donald Trump and all that he's been saying and flailing?
Yeah, I think in general, people had a lot of hope that Trump is going to resolve this in the best possible for Ukraine way. But obviously, we can see now that this is not the case. I know Ukraine is exhausted. People are exhausted, especially our soldiers at the front are exhausted. And we are losing people every day, civilians and the soldiers. But I also think that over the 3 years, Ukraine proved that we are a strong nation, okay. That we are fighting. And I think Europe should appreciate that the war is not yet in Europe as such, you know, in the Union. So I think that they should, I know they now kind of demand to participate in the negotiations, and I think they should do it stronger because it's not only about Ukraine. I think it's about the world order rather than anything else. And if you talk about democracy, I don't know where it is at the moment.
But sorry, Anna, what do you think? That Ukraine has suffered so much. Let the blood shed stop under any circumstances. How are you going to?
It's very hard to say.
Yeah.
Do you know, Ukrainian history is a history of fight. From the, the Versailles Agreement in 1999, after the Munich Agreement, Ukrainian insurgents army fought along those years with the communists. And I think if we, as a country, if we now accept top-down decision, this war is going to come back because it came back after the Minsk Agreement. And at the Minsk Agreement, Ukraine was represented by Putin's puppets, so we essentially didn't have a say in that either.
And at the Minsk Agreement, Ukraine gave up its nuclear weapons,
Exactly.
which was, in terms of bargaining position, That was part of the agreement with Russia, which they reneged on, obviously, because they then invaded. Say with us, please, Oriana, Oksana, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
What do you think, Oksana? Peace now at any price. It's too much blood has been shed. This is the, what do you think of that argument? That let's just...
Yes, definitely. I think, my own opinion, it's too many people dead, and it's just, you know, too much blood. Young people, you know, they're lost. Their mothers, sisters, their family. So everyone has a big hope it will be over soon, you know. So, and I hope the same, you know. Many people want to back home. From my own experience, I helped them here to, you know, recover after what they see, what they experience in Ukraine, you know,
Well, what does peace, Oksana, sir, I'll come back to you on the wider, but what does peace at any price mean now? Does it just mean Trump and Putin, Putin saying what I have, I hold, no NATO ever, Trump agreeing, Trump then pulling out all American support for Ukraine? But the war is over in that the perpetrator of the war has called a ceasefire.
Yeah, exactly. So we all hope, we all have hope that, you know, Trump will put some negotiation to finish and make a over all of that. Well, what's going on, what's happening there.
Okay. You have relations still there, obviously.
Yes. My old family, they're still there. So they live close to Polish border. So they are safe at the moment. But still, you know, every single day, every single hour, they just feeling very, like, stressful, you know. And they try to survive.
And would they, everyone would like to see an end of it, but at what price?
Yes, I mean, the price was already paid, you know. So, and it was necessary, you know. As I said, many people put their own life for, you know, half that peace. Many bloods were everywhere, and like young people, especially, you know, the 18 years old, they experience very bad things. It's like not acceptable in this century, 21st of century, you know.
It's not acceptable, but it is happening. Have you family involved at the moment directly?
Danger. Basically, my brother, he's an electrician. Mm-hmm. So he's involved in the different places. Okay. So they try to keep him safe, that they need to rebuild and, you know, fixed all electrician things was destroyed completely. But he still can see and, you know, he has awareness what people experienced, you know. So, but we hope he'll be safe. There's a lot of, you know, dangers around him, but he has two daughters and his wife. We are very religious family, so we just believe that he'll be safe and back home every week.
So he's working. He's working with the army.
Kind of.
He's working for his country. Do you think, Oksana, if Trump and Putin do a deal, what they have, they hold, it's to no advantage of Ukraine. It's effectively Ukraine being forced to surrender what they've lost, and the return price is no more atrocities, no more killings by the Russians. Do you think there would be a guerrilla war then against the Russians? Do you follow me?
you know, I to be honest, I just, from my own experience, Putin is not like a, you know, I shouldn't say, but he just, he doesn't care about people's lives. And I don't think there's anything could stop him to not doing the things he already do. It's a long time, it's 3 years now. Nobody even told in a serious way that be like so long, you know. Okay. Everybody told that will.
Well, Trump would say, as he always did, you have to give me credit. You have to give me credit. At least I have a plan. At least I was talking to Putin, Joe Biden wasn't.
Yeah. But that's another, you know, it's another game, I suppose. It shouldn't be in that way. Because the people already got a big trauma after over 3 years, you know. So,
okay, say with it, Oksana. 51551joe@rt.ie. Andrew, sorry for holding you. Andrew, what do you think of that position? That Trump has a plan, at least something is starting, and let's see what happens.
Absolutely. Hi, Joe. Glad to hear you. Yeah, absolutely agree that we need to wait for the official statements, because for now it's just like talks, you know. But definitely something needs to be done, and the ceasefire needs to be provided. Because, listen, every day people die, a lot of people. Ukraine is much smaller than Russia. We just like have not that much people, you know, and it's terrible thing for us, you know, so that we lose so much people and civil and soldiers as well. And as we see, Russians every day, they take more and more Ukrainian territories. Mm-hmm. So technically, we cannot wait for longer, because they will take more and they will kill more people. We definitely need to stop it. On what conditions, I don't know, and probably no one knows. Yeah, so all we need to hope for is that when the ceasefire will be provided, there would be like political games, and something would be solved. I don't know what. But for now, it looks like a lot of Ukrainian soldiers give their lives for what? You know, so the part of Ukraine already stolen. Yeah, they hold the enemy as long as they can. So technically, their lives were like the very, very high price to stop Russians and don't let them go further in Europe, you know. But we still lost our territories and we lost our people. So it's a very challenging, it's a very difficult situation, because on one side, we want everything to be stopped, but on another side, if it will stop like that and we will not get back our lands and our people who live on that land, so what was it for, you know? So we just lost a lot of people, a lot of lands, and that's terrible. So that's why it's really hard to say something for sure, because I'm definitely not a military or political analytics. Yeah, and I'm just like regular Ukrainian, and I know that a lot of people are want this war to be stopped, and soldiers and the civil people, of course.
Well, would it help, Andrei? Because I'm reading now from the London Times, it wouldn't be regarded as a left-wing organ by any stretch. Europe is now faced with a new political reality of a US president who intends to do quick peace with Russia and has bypassed Kiev, London, Paris, Berlin, Warsaw and other capitals. Diplomats fear that Trump and Putin may agree to a new peace settlement above the heads of European governments, with Ukraine and Europe suffering the consequences. There's also the prospect of a European peacekeeping troops being in the front line to defend a settlement that is not in Europe's interests. If there was an agreement to both sides, insofar as one side is the invader, but both sides take what you have, you hold, which is what J.D. Vance has said, and he's on his way to Munich. What they have, they hold, including Crimea, including any advances in the last 3 years. But then we need a peacekeeping force, and it's not going to be the Americans. They said, we're out of here. What about, do you think Irish troops should be involved in a peacekeeping mission?
Well, I think that all the European countries need to be involved in this political process. Yeah, not only Donald Trump. So it should not create any argues between the countries, you know, European and America. Yeah, so it should be kind of I don't know, group work, you know, teamwork. So all those countries who support Ukraine, they need to help Ukraine and create the actual plan, which would definitely help Ukraine to get back in life, you know, to stop the war, to get back the territories, to raise the economy, economical system of Ukraine. Because otherwise, it's pretty strange, you know. So this war is lasting for 3 years. And we see, we can see that many things that were promised and planned were not made, you know. So we're literally losing this war.
But
so
remember, Andrei, that Putin thought the war would last not 3 years, the invasion would last not 3 years, but 3 days before he would overthrow Zelensky.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it is to great, a horrific consequence and cost.
Yeah.
But to enormous credit to the Ukrainian people.
Yeah.
That they've withstood the jackboot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, Andres, please stay with us if you can. I know people are working that, and there's more people who want to contribute. Please do. joe@rte.ie, especially if you've been talking to people back home in Ukraine. 51551. And joe@rte.ie. Tatiana, good afternoon. I know you're now based in Clane in County Kildare.
Good afternoon.
20% of your country is occupied. What do you think of what's happening between Trump and Putin, I suppose, is the most topical.
Right. I think that, like, two bloodthirsty beasts are talking about sharing a half-dead rabbit, you know. Maybe I'm a bit exaggerating, or maybe vice versa, you know. But, who kind of, I don't think they call, like, who are in this war, who share the world. They are talking about the destiny of the country, and that's not a country, it's people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they consider people at all. They think about power, influence, maybe some temporary peace and break for themselves, you know, but not about their destinies and fate of real people and Ukrainian nation altogether, you know. So I think it's a kind of, I agree that it's a kind of game, you know, that they are playing with destinies and are not considering, like, that a lot has already been done, a lot of dramas, a lot of traumas, right? All of us have suffered from that. And it's not like it's millions of people, you know, it's a huge country in the middle of Europe, and it caused a lot of very difficult consequences, and they will keep on going, you know. That's why I think it's a good idea to start some kind of negotiations, because it may have some positive outcome. I think the only positive outcome is, like, stop people from dying, you know, and from further destruction of the country. But I'm very skeptical about other good outcomes for Ukraine.
But if there was a cessation, and if there was, and the agreement is what we hold, there's no giving back of any land that's been annexed by Russia, and there was a peacekeeping force, a European peacekeeping force to control the border, there'll be some peacekeeping force necessary, be some border. But do you think people would go back, Tatiana, from here, for example, to live in Ukraine?
I think so. That's, a lot of people are waiting for the end of the war because they still have their property, their families there, and they will go back. Not all have found their way here, you know, and it's not so easy for people at a certain age, you know.
Yeah.
But of course, a lot of people will stay, because especially those with kids who have gone to schools, you know, universities, maybe those who have found jobs. And, I don't know if it's good or bad, but, some people will stay for sure, yes. But a lot I know people that would like to go back, but they want to bring their kids to a safe place.
Stay with us, Tatiana, please. 51551. Joe with RT.ie. Vladimir. What's your...
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good. What is your situation? What do you think at the moment on this day, Vladimir, on the eve of a Munich security conference, on the eve of, it looks like, the next few weeks, probably sooner rather than later, summit between Putin and Trump in Saudi Arabia under Bin Salam. Is it time to say enough is enough, peace at any price?
I don't think so. I think, first of all, it's too early to speculate. We don't really know what's going to be agreed, what will happen. But if it's some kind of agreement that is not accepted by the army, Ukrainian army, mm-hmm. Zelensky would never sign up for that. You know, Trump can want whatever he wants, but
okay.
Zelensky doesn't feel support of his people, he will never sign for this, and he will just reject that agreement. And the Ukrainian army, even without American support, will continue fighting. Maybe not as successfully as before, but European Union will support us, and some other countries will support us. So it's not, Trump wants something, but it doesn't mean it's going to happen. Like, it's not a magic wand that he will push Zelensky against the wall and say, sign this. If Zelensky is not he doesn't want to commit kind of political suicide, because he wants to be remembered as well in the history of Ukraine as successful president. So he will never sign the surrender agreement or something like that. So there will be uprising. If he signs something like that, there will be uprising on among army, and will be internal. A revolution inside Ukraine, So it's not as easy as it sounds. Like, oh yeah, Trump and Putin, they agree behind the back. Yeah, it's not going to be like that, no.
And do you think there would be... if Zelensky doesn't sign, but the new world order, so to speak, is imposed between Putin and Trump pulls out his military support.
Yeah, but there is a small continent in the middle of that called Europe. Europe is not weak. Europe is the largest economy in the world, altogether. Population-wise as well, huge. So Europe is on the Ukrainian side, and Europe will continue. I'm pretty sure will continue to support Ukraine. Maybe Hungarians and Slovaks will stay aside. But they don't play really a big role in European Union. So. It's not like Ukraine will be left on its own, And the leaders of European Union yesterday, I think they said that they want to be present at these negotiations. Europe wants to be there. So it's not only USA and Russia,
But
there should be European Union.
But isn't that what Bill Clinton said once in I think it's in his memoir, that his problem was if there's an emergency and the red phone rings in the middle of the night and it's a phone call from Putin or his own intelligent, he said, who do I ring in Europe? Who do I ring? Who do you ring in Europe? Macron?
Macron would love to be a leader. At the moment.
Keir Starmer, who do I ring?
No, I forgot the name of the lady who is in charge of European Union.
Van der Leyen,
She, I think she's in charge now of all this.
And she was.
You ring her.
Okay. She was a German defense minister, right?
And the most important point of all of this is that Putin doesn't want to end the war. For him, the war is the way of life. It's his future. If he stops the war, what he gonna do with all this million army? Like, what he gonna bring them home? Resettle again, like in normal life. It's not these people. They now used to fight. They want to fight. He will stop in Ukraine. Let's look at Baltic states. Let's look. He would love to swallow Moldova as well. It just can't access because Ukraine on his way. So he will be looking at northern Kazakhstan, wherever. For him, the war is the way of life. He will swallow Georgia totally now.
So he will never stop, because he know, like these soldiers that fight in Ukraine now, they've been paid very well comparison to normal people in Russia. They paid lots of money. So if they go back to Russia and they mother Russia and they will say, okay, now you're back to normal life, go get, work for 200, 300 euros a month instead of 2,000 or 3,000 euros a month. These people will never accept that, you know. So they will be stuck looking for some criminality, you know. It will be like back in 90s, there was a mob rule, you know. It will be mafia everywhere, killing. So, and Putin understands there will be some kind of uprising. It's like First World War. When the First World War ended, all these soldiers came back, and there was a Russian Revolution happening at that time, you know. Like all this, you know. He knows that this army is a threat to him as well, you know, if he brings it back home. So for him, it's better to keep it outside Russian borders somewhere, you know. In, so we'll be looking at other countries. Yeah. So for him, he wants to continue fighting. He doesn't. He will be playing with Trump as well, you know.
Well, tell us what you think of Donald Trump.
I think he sometimes it's hard to understand what he's like. Mm-hmm. He's saying one day one thing, next day another thing.
Well, maybe that's his gift. Maybe that's his gift that Putin doesn't know what he will or won't do.
Whereas but Putin is the same, actually. He's a liar. He's a compulsive liar. He's always lying. For him, is white is black, black is white, you know, right is wrong. He's manipulating all these years with Russian public, you know, all using the media and everything, you know. They're like zombies. So Putin is... Trump would love to be like a Putin, but he doesn't have that such power like Putin, you know. Putin is a tsar, you know, total control of everything. Without Putin, they can't even build a bridge somewhere in Russia, you know. So Putin decides everything.
So, Vladimir, what would need to happen for people like yourself or people that you know here who are from Ukraine to go back to Ukraine, to feel safe?
Fighting should stop. The fighting should stop and lots of people will go back, like especially elderly. You know, these people, they want to go home, you know.
So if the fighting stops on Putin and Trump's terms, is that enough?
No, we don't know what is the story. Yeah, we'll lose this territory. I will. I feel sorry about those people who left their homes and their occupied territories. You know, they probably lost their home forever. It's like it will be very hard to get these territories back. But the rest of the country, people who are here in Ireland or all over Europe or all over the world, most of these, lots of people would love to come back to peaceful Ukraine and live in the small apartments or whatever houses, meet their friends, you know, back to normal life, like, you know. So, but what will happen, we don't know. It's all speculation. Let's see and wait. Give them month, two, three, we will see where it goes. But well, now we're just talking.
Well, this conference in Munich, I know Trump is not there and Putin's not there, but Putin was never at the Munich Security Conference anyway. He wasn't invited. But J.D. Vance will be there, the Germans will be there, the British will be there. But Boris Pistorius, the German Defence Minister, said it was regrettable that the Trump administration has already made concessions to Russia before peace talks on Ukraine have even started. Key concessions were made up front, referring to, and we've seen a lot of them.
Instead of rising the stakes, you should go aim for the highest, you know, things. But they straight away like, occupied territories impossible to get back and stuff like that. Instead of saying, we will do everything to get these territories, and then when you start negotiate, then you can bring down your demands, you know. But this, it's very difficult. But Zelensky is a very difficult situation. But he, you know, I wouldn't like to be on his position. But he is in that position, and I think he's the right man to get the best deal out of this for Ukraine.
And I know I you mentioned it earlier, but I don't want to raise it again because it is, and you raise it in a context, and it was a very important context about his legacy. But it is, in truth, Zelensky's legacy in world history is already concretized because of his leadership in the last...
I think so as well. But some people try to undermine, especially in Russia, all these trolls.
Yeah, of course.
But,
yeah.
You know, they try to put some doubts in Ukrainian people's minds, and like saying, you know, they always have false information about this and that. Zelensky is enriching himself, stealing stuff. His friends have, you know, all this. And people believe all this, you know. So it's very. Some people in Ukraine are confused as well. They don't know who to believe. And today, actually, Zelensky introduced against ex-president of Ukraine Poroshenko some sanctions on his finances, accusing him of collaborating with Putin's man who was in Ukraine, Medvedchuk. He was arrested 3 years ago, and then he was exchanged for Ukrainian soldiers. But they're accusing Poroshenko that he was his friend and they were doing business together and taking money out of Ukraine as well. So they introduced sanctions against Poroshenko today. It's a brave move on this because Poroshenko has a big support in Ukraine. No, not big, but at least like 10% support. And he has media in his hands, so he manipulates media as well in his favor. And they're the ones who help in Russian propaganda and bringing this false information about Zelensky.
Stay with us, Vladimir. Hugh Sheridan, you good afternoon. Joe at RT.ie, 51551. Your contribution, please, you.
Yes, Joe. I just want to say, Joe, without the Americans coming in to back our European war effort, Europe is going to collapse.
Mm-hmm.
If we go back in history to 1918, there was a spring offensive by the Germans that nearly won World War I for the Germans, or the Central Powers. The Americans came in and twisted this round and they won the war.
Well, you were so right. But the Americans came in when the Americans were being threatened themselves, were being attacked. German submarines.
Exactly.
Like the American position. There's no chance of that happening now. But anyway, you're right about the American intervention. But World War II, they intervened after Pearl Harbor.
Well, after Pearl Harbor, they assembled their air force and they came over in their 1,000 GIs and they won the war for Europe. Now, so, without that, Europe is bunched.
But, tell me then, how are we going to persuade Trump?
Well,
who got out of the draft, he had some foot, some verruca on his foot on a spur, but yeah. I don't know what spurs
are. He avoided being drafted.
But how do you, I take your point, Hugh, that America is so important and we should be a friend of America. But how can we persuade this man?
Well, he can't be persuaded. His own people are going to have to cop on to him and say he's just elected him, and he won both.
I suspect much better than I do. He won the electoral college. He won the popular vote. Now I know he's been exaggerating like hell as he does every day, but we're well used to it. It was the greatest vote in American history. It wasn't, but anyway, he is riding. He is surfing the biggest waves ever, and there's no sign of him falling off that surfboard.
Well, without America, Europe is bunched. It's as simple as that. They rebuilt Europe after World War II with the Marshall Plan.
Yeah.
They bankrolled the war so far. The British Army is in disarray, from what I can gather from the newspapers. And at this stage, without the Americans, Putin is just going to steamroll his way across Europe, one country by one country. He'll take the three Baltic states, which used to be Soviet republics, and then he'll start hitting his former Warsaw Pact satellites such as Hungary and Romania and Bulgaria. That's his plan. The end justifies the means, Joe. And until we in Europe realise we need America so badly, we are bunched.
Yeah, what about the opening argument, the discussion today? Should the people of Ukraine and say enough is enough? And let's agree to whatever Putin and Trump come up with.
Yeah, and then what will happen? He'll draw breath for about 2 years and he'll start again on the Baltic states because he knows that America will not come in and bolster the European war effort from, you know, the Germans, the French, the British. They're no match for what the Russians have in population. So I think Trump needs to be convinced now that we will have a right-wing fascist Europe within 15 years unless he starts being realistic.
Okay, and then we should remember as well, the other, the fight in the Second World War is about Nazism, which was defeated, but one of the people who defeated Nazism was Communist Russia, who suffered grievously. Vladimir, are you, you're not optimistic, are you? It's a stupid question, but things are okay, well, let me put it another way. Are things looking better or worse than they were? Even, you know, Trump has spoken to Putin. It did go on for 90 minutes. There must be some meeting of minds.
No, I think Trump is very easily overwhelmed by a very powerful man. So when he meets Putin or when he talks to Putin, he becomes like a little puppy, you know, Trump. But when he comes out again, he's like a strong lion. So he I think he after chatting to Putin, he become like, and Putin, he's like always like, saying maybe compliments to him and saying, oh, he's so good, congratulations on your win. And that's why Trump is so, like, he loves Putin, you know, for that. But I'm optimistic.
No,
of course, I can't see, of course, how we're going to get the territories that we lost back. Only if we do something outrageous, like we occupied some part of Russia in Kursk region and we can exchange it. So maybe we'll do another operation before the peace agreement. Maybe, I don't know, Ukrainian army can occupy Belgorod region on the border of Ukraine. Then we can exchange for occupied territories. That's the only way I can see that we can get the occupied territories back.
I really appreciate your contribution and the contribution of everybody so far today. Thanks indeed, Vladimir. Joe at rt.ie. And just reminding you of the email if you want to participate in the Ukrainian debate, Joe at rt.ie. Ned, good afternoon.
Afternoon, Joe.
How are you keeping?
Keeping going, that's it.
That's good.
One foot for the other.
You're still farming?
No.
Are you not?
No.
Okay. So when?
I was farming.
Okay. Now you had an epiphany in farming when you were asked to do all the paperwork and then you were diagnosed at 61 years of age with dyslexia. How did that happen?
Well, Joe, it's just I wasn't picked up.
Yeah.
And that was it. Like I reckon anyone 55 years of age on, they're not picked up. They weren't picked up in school and they left school early, which what I did as well. Well, it was, I didn't do it, but my parents took me out at 13 because it was going nowhere.
Not uncommon, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So how was the dyslexia eventually noticed? You're out of school at 13.
Yeah.
So 48 years later.
Yeah, I the farming, it was okay when I got out of school. There was only one thing there. Farmers will remember it. The blue card, that's always only a piece of paper that was on farming, and that was it. And then slowly paperwork started getting into it, and I used to get the Chagas people to do the work for me, and I didn't understand half of it.
Okay.
I was just sending in forms and I wasn't familiar with the forms, and I gave them the information.
Right.
And then what happened, I knew, Joe, that there was a possibility of getting an unannounced inspection, which I got. And when I was in the reps thing, and I was doing things wrong, that's it, for want of a better word.
All right.
And then I got, what happened is over having this, and you always knew there was a chance of having an inspection, but I got anxiety and depression over it.
Wow.
That clicked in.
Wow.
And my wife, because I was going to bed, and my wife told me I was to go and get counselling.
Okay.
And she wasn't the first time to ask me, but she was a great woman to tolerate me, she was, And I went for counselling, and the third session of the counselling, the woman said to me, I think there's nothing wrong with you at all. It's bringing your anxiety and depression. Yeah. Do you ever think of getting yourself assessed for dyslexia?
Brilliant. Brilliant.
And I heard about it all right, but I never knew. I didn't associate I'd had it. I didn't know what it was about. But since then, I'm at the learning a good bit about it.
And tell me about the assessment, Ned.
The assessment, yeah, for dyslexia. I went to my daughter organised it. And I went for the assessment up in Kilkee Castle. That's just out the road here from us in Castledermot.
Okay.
And I remember went in and I remember the sweat was dripping out from under my arms because I hadn't been back in that situation before, which, you know, like a teacher or something like that. I didn't know what was going to happen to me. So anyway, she gave me a lot of tea. Remember, it must be 5 or 6 cups of tea.
Okay.
Trying to cool me down, trying to calm me down a bit.
Yeah.
Then she said to me, when she went over to all the exams and a little bit of the exams and stuff, she says, no doubt about what you have, dyslexia.
Okay.
And she said, will you promise me one thing? Why did you come at this late stage in your life?
Yeah.
To get assessed. And I told her about having the inspection with the department.
Yeah, and on that.
And then she said to me, will you promise me one thing before you leave here? Will you ring the department in the morning and see, have they got it in a format that you can understand, mainly a CD format?
Excellent.
This is for the cross compliance.
Yeah.
And it's a book, there's about 100 pages in it.
Okay.
And it's known as the Bible for the farmers.
Yeah, I've heard about it before a lot.
But it's with this.
But assessor was saying, Ned, you can ring the department. We discovered this yesterday. It's apparently available on the driver theory test as well. If you have dyslexia, you can look for assistance in trying to unravel the language. And did you at that stage were you willing or able to go back to the department for the cross compliant booklet and say, I need a better way of understanding this?
I had an awful job finding them to get someone to do it.
Did you? Yeah?
I just kept going from one office to the other down in Port Leash, and then they were nailed out. Then I was sent up to Kildare Street, and I was going from Jimmy to Jack around up there.
Yeah.
Eventually, I got a person to help me. And so they helped me out with it, getting the CD.
Hmm.
But it was only done for me, Joe. It was done for no one else.
It was put in the bottom drawer
of the filing cabinet.
That was incredible.
It was no one else knew.
And you're not the first child, rural or urban, to leave school at 13 or even before. Were you able to read or write when you left school, Ned?
No, Tom, Joe.
No.
Well, even today I can't link the letters.
Yeah, okay.
I couldn't, Joe. What did you see with the beating I was getting in school?
Yeah.
The beating was just unnatural. I used to get between 10 and 10 and a half, 10 in the morning. That's when I wouldn't have the homework done.
Because you couldn't understand it.
And I was getting that every morning, being beaten. And there's another guy with me as well, and the two of us. And then I got in trouble in school with an ulcer. And I got operated in that. I remember the surgeon, Mr. Brown, living in Richmond, he told me he took out my appendix as well when he was there.
Yeah.
Went back to school about 5 weeks afterwards, and I started wetting the bed again. The beatings were going on again there. So, and it wasn't nice. My parents took me out of school at 13.
Yeah.
And I went into the farming. My father was very disappointed with me because he knew that paperwork was... wasn't it just a runner for me, and that was it.
Yeah.
And if I had been able to read and write, going to school properly, Joe, I wouldn't have been a farmer.
Would you not?
I'd love to be a fault finder on machinery. Okay. I'd love to be a fault finder on machinery.
A fault finder?
What?
You would have loved to work with machinery.
Yes, yeah. Faults.
Okay.
Your machines, they're making everything.
Brilliant.
And that's why I'd be good at that, like, you know what I mean? But anyway, Joe, I was, that's it. I got here and I was listening to your, yesterday. And I just said, I'll give you a ring on it, you know what I mean?
And then when you got to diagnosis, Ned, What was that feeling for you then? Was it a liberation?
Of course it was, Joe. It was like, I knew there was some wrong way, but I didn't ever, I knew, I heard of dyslexic, but I never associated I have that. I mean, I was told I had this learning disability. I was a big weight lifted off. Yeah. And Joe, it's not alone going on in this country. It's going on in the other 27 countries. In Brussels, in the EU.
Yeah. There should
be. That's not just isolated.
Yes, there should be. Well, every department should be, every document should be proofed in terms of and systems put in place for people with dyslexia or indeed literacy problems. And by the way, did your family know about this, Ned? I don't know. Did you have children?
Yeah.
Did they know that daddy couldn't read or write?
Well, Joe, it was like this. My son used to ask me to read a story at night time. Yeah. And I'd always come up with some excuse to get out through someone's car. And I wasn't able to do that now. Simple story. I wasn't able to do it. And the mother would read it for the two girls. And he'd always want me to go in and tell some old story about the horse in the bog or something like this that got stuck years ago.
Yeah.
You know, happened in my father's time.
So you made up your own stories?
Yeah. Like, just something like that, but the 27 countries in Brussels, there's an audit done on them by the EU, and I want to know, is the audit, the question asked, how do they accommodate people with learning disabilities?
Well put. Stay with us, Ned. I need to take a break and I'll speak to Anne as well after this. Joe at RT.ie. Anne Glennon's in Galway. Anne, you're listening to Ned. You say, I think it's a brilliant line. You noticed that it was when you realised your intellect didn't match your ability. In other words, you eventually went. And what age were you when you were diagnosed with severe dyslexia?
I'd say it was about my late 40s.
Okay, and what prompted you to go for the...
Well, I work in the area of disability, and I always knew that there was something different, and things just didn't add up. And I was on a course one day, and I was with a speech and language therapist, and I just asked her, I said, is there something with not knowing your left and right? You know, there's something scientific, because I knew the speech and language therapist. She was a lovely girl, and I was in the right place to ask a question.
Okay.
And it was her that eventually said it to me. And she said, do you think? And from then on, I said, okay, I was in my 40s. It was now that I could have a little bit of time for myself. So I said, okay, invest time finding out what is going on here. And it took an awful lot, because I suppose it brought up a lot of negative emotions from school days and, you know, different things. And it was a big step to take. And I had great support from my husband and my family. And I took it, done the test, and I felt liberated. Wow. I felt there was confirmation. I felt power, that I had power now, where before I was powerless.
Mm-hmm.
And it just opened up a whole new world.
And that phrase you used, that your intellect didn't match your ability, in other words, you were brighter than you could ever display. Is that your point?
I had a really good memory.
Yeah, great.
I had a good way of articulating things. I worked in the area of disability. I was really good at my job. The paperwork, and also at that time, paperwork was increasing in my job, and I was starting to feel, I can do my job really well, but I can't articulate what I could in speech on paper. And even form filling, and because there's paper trails now, the ability was lacking in that area.
And so, stay with us. Ned, is it fair to say that it was paperwork that drove you out of farming?
Yeah, it was. Wow. And also, Joe, what's there as well, there's a stigma there today. I don't care what anyone say I'm wrong, but I know there's a stigma.
About dyslexia?
For anyone 55 years of age on. Not the younger generation, they're being dealt with some way. It's not perfect either, but it's better than what was in my day.
I feel, you know, I don't have any stigma now because I know it's not my fault. I know no matter what I did or what I could do, it was not my fault I used to do. You know, I could apply myself as much as possible. But the main thing for me is to keep stress-free.
Yeah.
And when I keep stress-free and I have people around me who support me, my dyslexia isn't as intense because I have the time, people are patient, and I'm not rushed.
Excellent, yeah. And Anne, you've been listening as well to what Ned said. It was when that the paperwork landed on him out of the blue, and there was a lot of paperwork. And he, in his own words, he took to the bed, but he was suffering from anxiety and depression and stress.
Well, you feel very, you know, there's negative emotions, especially too when you look back on your school days. And when I listen to people who have had, you know, great experiences in school and, you know yourself that you tried, but just nothing. And also the environment, the teaching environment, it just wasn't adequate. Or it just didn't, you weren't, your needs just weren't being met. So you could never flourish. You always felt...
And you mentioned school in passing there. Did you suffer in school as well because of your dyslexia? Because
Yes, deeply. Oh. Deeply. Yeah, horrendously.
Physically.
You know, from people who were educators, who were supposed to support you, who were supposed to...
Right.
The spiel and you were stupid, you were lazy, you were...
My God.
You know, and your peer group were listening to this also. So, you know, it affected where you were in your peer group, that they were seeing you. They could have seen you as stupid, whatever. Do you know, they were. It was nearly like advertising you as a stupid person.
Okay. Other people, I hope, will get in touch with us as well. Even the phone number is very straightforward. The text number, if you can text, and wish to text, is 51551. But thank you so much, Ned, and Glennon, and kind regards on your remarkable journey. On sound today, Niall McMonagall, Mary Elizabeth Bruton was the broadcast coordinator. Sean O'Gorman produced, and Ray Darcy's next.